really an exciting way to look at the whole human liberation movement, because so long the emphasis has been that this is only to the advantage of women. And this conference tried to show how both men and women benefit from the human liberation movement. One of the speakers at this conference was Warren Farrell, and Casey can...
Well, the commission has decided, and I don't know if I told you all or not, they have decided to invite Warren Farrell here to speak, hopefully on April 10th. I think that's a Tuesday evening, and the time and the place is not yet set. But I imagine his presentation will be new male consciousness, and probably we'll talk pretty much about what you heard at your conference that you went to. I'd like to certainly invite everyone listening to attend that session. I have heard very good reports, not only from you, that the people that went to that conference, but also from people across the country that have heard him speak and have read his articles.
He had an article in Ms. last month talking about male consciousness groups and getting together with women's consciousness groups and a whole arrangement of consciousness groups to try and help both women and men to overcome some of the stereotyping that they feel that they don't want to fit into, and to try and reach the kind of people that they want to become. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I think that this will present a part of the women's movement that hasn't been talked about much here anyway on this campus, and that is that it's not anti-marriage and it's not anti-men, but it's just letting people make their own choices about what they want to do, what their interests and abilities are. And certainly it's not anti-housewife. I think we have all encountered in some of our speaking engagements a very great defensiveness on the part of some women who feel that we're there to put them down. But that's not true. We'd like to elevate the status of housewife. It's a very hard job, and doesn't have the status that it should for all that it encompasses. So I think as more people find out more about what the women's movement or the human liberation movement is about, they'll see that there's something in it for everyone.
The point is giving every human a choice to be what he or she chooses to become. And if that's housewife, that's fine. If that's married, that's fine. As long as everyone has the choice.
Yeah, I think one of the things from the play that was amusing, but I think it's true, was the Dick and Jane part of the readers that we all went through. And to show how much, you know, we have been brainwashed into thinking of ourselves only in certain ways. And the portrayal of women in the media now is not that much different.
And again, to add the portrayal of men also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really.
So I think that a feminist play of this kind and other kinds of feminist writings and plays and rock liberation bands and everything else will help to show that there is a different kind of woman and a different kind of man who are seeking different things for themselves.
I'm really encouraged to see that there are more and more kinds of media presentations, not only plays, but more and more films, and we might mention, too, the record that Free to Be You and Me, mm-hmm, is the title of it, and who puts
They had an advertisement in Ms., I don't know.
Marlo Thomas and Friends is what it's called, made the record for Ms. magazine, and came out right before Christmas, I think. It has some really classic songs in there about Nobody Likes Housework and some other kinds of things.
It's Okay to Cry.
It's Okay to Cry by Rosie Greer sings that one. So I think it shows that, gives some different models to preschoolers. I think it's primarily aimed at preschoolers. Some different kinds of songs to grow up singing other than I Love Him, I'll Follow Him Anywhere. So hopefully that will make an impact.
When I think what an impact such songs and the images had in my past, all the songs were like that, I think. I Love Him, I'll Follow Him.
Oh, yeah, very romantic idea of the whole thing. And mm-hmm. When you get married, it's some sort of heaven and your life is bliss.
I think for the most part, the songs are still that way if you'll, on the radio. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. It's not a very realistic view.
That's just so unfortunate because, I think I can't really speak for men that much, but for a woman to think that this love relationship is a bliss forever after is a horrible burden on the on the person that I would bestow my love upon.
And on the relationship.
Oh, yes.
When I was on vacation last week and I was flying back to Kansas City, one of the stewardesses came on and said, I want to announce that Jane has been flying with TWA for 5 years now, and she's going to get married in April. Now let's give her a big hand. And everyone clapped, and I just couldn't bring myself to clap. Just like getting married was the end of all her working life. Well, it probably won't be if she was a well-educated woman, and you know, that's just not the end, but that seemed to be, well, now she can quit working. Let's give her a big hand. And I just thought that, wow, attitudes are so slow to change.
Mm-hmm. As if all people are completely happy when they do quit working.
I think that's probably not the case.
Oh, it's really fun. I was in New York and my vacation sons were telling stories. And I rode the subway for the first time, and right above me there was an advertisement about Miss New York Subway. And that she had been in nursing school and had been fortunate enough to meet a doctor and is engaged now.
I saw the same thing in the New York Subway, and at first I thought it was a put on. This was a joke. But, you know, I guess that there's a lot of people who still have this attitude that once you're married,
you're there.
Well, I remember the woman, middle-aged woman, who, when asked to introduce herself and tell something important about her, said that her daughter's getting married this summer. He said, that's all, just tell that about me. That's important enough.
Yeah, I've made it now.
Yeah.
My daughter's getting married.
It was also, I think I heard the same woman, it was in the same group that we talked to. The other half to her life was that her son was in the football team or something and was starting or something. Mm-hmm. It just kind of was a culmination of the whole total kind of attitude.
Well, I think, again, I want to invite everyone who's listening to come to the Human Sexuality Seminar this Thursday, 7:30 in the Big 8 Room, and we'll explore some ideas on new male consciousness. And at that time, there will be sign-up sheets for any men who are interested in getting in men's discussion groups. There are some facilitators now who would be glad to help these groups get started. So if you plan to attend on Thursday evening and would like to get into such a group, there will be an opportunity for you to sign up.
Also, in the Dean and Women's Office, we'll have some sign-up sheets or whatever you might call them for. Warren Farrell has said that he would like to conduct some rap sessions with men that are interested in this, so they would have that opportunity to do that when he comes on that Tuesday, April 10th, also. We'd like to thank you for tuning in tonight to A Feminist Perspective and hope that you will tune in again next week at the same time.
Listen again next Monday at 7 for A Feminist Perspective. Each Monday night at this time, KANU and the Office of the Dean of Women at the University of Kansas present A Feminist Perspective. This program provides a forum for women to speak out on issues which concern them. Listeners will also have an opportunity to participate in the program by calling the KANU open line at 864-4530. And now here's our moderator for A Feminist Perspective, Casey Ikey.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for A Feminist Perspective. This radio show is sponsored by the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center, located in the Dean of Women's office at 220 Strong Hall, the University of Kansas. The Women's Resource and Career Planning Center contains a career information system, media and films on the women's movement, graduate and professional school catalogs, information on birth control and sexuality, and a women's library. The library is composed of notebooks containing news clippings and magazine articles, government documents, and newsletters giving information about the whole realm of ideas involved in the women's movement. The library also contains many books which can be checked out for a 2-week period. We would like to invite you to visit the Women's Resource and Career Planning Center and to take advantage of the lending library. If you would like speakers or programs on the women's movement, please feel free to contact us at 220 Strong Hall at the University of Kansas. Tonight on A Feminist Perspective, we're going to do something a little bit different. We will do a radio dramatization of a feminist play, and Mary Mitchelson is going to be the narrator, and I'll have her explain a little bit more about the play.
The title of this play is We've Only Just Begun. It was first presented at the IA Interstate Intercollegiate Association of Women's Students Convention in Fort Collins, Colorado. This play was researched and compiled by Annette Martin. Okay. She was the director of oral interpretation at Eastern Michigan University.
On the Christmas tree, John and Susie, six-year-old twins, are opening their presents. John gets a baseball bat. Susie gets a Barbie doll. John gets a chemistry set. Susie gets a sewing kit. John gets an erector set. And Susie gets a giant dollhouse complete with furniture and miniature vacuum cleaner. Grandma and Grandpa arrive with books under their arms for the kids. Susie's book is called Jane Taylor Wants to Be a Nurse. John's is Dr. Dan the Bandage Man.
I'm sick of the masquerade. I'm sick of pretending eternal youth. I am sick of belying my own intelligence, my own will, my own sex. I'm sick of peering at the world through false eyelashes, so everything I see is mixed with a shadow of bought hairs. I'm sick of pretending that some male's self-important pronouncements are the objects of my undivided attention. I'm sick of going to films and plays when someone else wants to, and sick of having no opinions of my own about either. I refuse to be a female impersonator. I am a woman.
Women are increasingly becoming concerned with themselves, with their positions in society, with their relationships to men, to their profession, with their humanity and its expression. Feminism, a movement of women toward...
Elizabeth Cady Stanton, 1855. It is not a question of meats and drinks, of money and lands, but of human rights, the sacred right of a woman to own her own person, to all her God-given powers of body and soul.
Human rights, the struggle for them.
My country, 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty.
The prolonged slavery of women is the darkest page in human history. In 1776, the nation was worrying about the rights of man. Yet, nearly 70 years before, a different awareness had been quietly awakened. Anne Bradstreet, 1642.
Let Greeks be Greeks and women what they are. Men have precedence and still excel. It is but vain unjustly to wage war. Men can do best, and women know it well. Preeminence in each and all is yours. Yet grant some small acknowledgement to ours.
That timid voice was to be echoed years later.
Abigail Adams, 1776. Dearest husband, I long to hear that you have declared an independence. And by the way, in the new code of laws, which I suppose it will be necessary for you to make, I desire that you should remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. If particular care and attention are not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion, and will not hold ourselves bound to obey any laws in which we have no voice or representation.
Women had good reason to foment a rebellion. They had no rights. Rousseau, for example, advised women that the education of women should always be relative to that of man.
Mary Wollstonecraft, 1833. What nonsense! When will a great man arise with sufficient strength of mind to puff away the fumes which pride and sensuality have thus spread over the subject?
To please us, to be useful to us, to make us love and esteem them.
Sarah Grimke, 1837. Man has exercised the most unlimited and brutal power over woman in the peculiar character of husband, a word in most countries synonymous with tyrant. Woman, instead of being elevated by her union with man, which might be expected from an alliance with a superior being, is in reality lowered. She generally loses her individuality, her independent character, her moral being.
To educate us when young, to take care of us when grown, to advise us, to console us, to render our lives easy and agreeable, These are the duties of women at all times and what they should be taught from their infancy.
Angela Grimke, 1837. I have often been amused at the vain effort made to define the rights and responsibilities of immortal beings as men and women. No one has yet found out just where the line of separation between them should be drawn, and for this simple reason, that no one knows just how far below man woman is, whether she be a head shorter than in her moral responsibilities, or head and shoulders, or the full length of his noble stature below him, that is, under his feet.
Margaret Fuller, 1843. It is therefore that I would have woman lay aside all thoughts such as she habitually cherishes of being taught and led by men. I would have her free from compromise, from complacence, from helplessness, because I would have her good enough and strong enough to love one and all beings from the fullness, not the poverty, of being.
Women had good cause to be upset. Their grievances were many, and listed at the Seneca Falls Convention.
Man has never permitted her to exercise her inalienable right to executive franchise.
Man has compelled woman to submit to laws in the formation of which she had no voice.
Man has made woman, if married, in the eyes of the law, civilly dead.
Man has taken from woman all rights in property, even to the wages she earns.
Man has so framed the law of divorce as to be wholly regardless of the happiness of women, the law in all cases going upon the false supposition of the supremacy of man, and giving all power. So, humanity will continue to suffer and cry in vain for deliverance. If society will not admit of women's free development, then society must be remodeled.
Society is slow to be remodeled. The feminist movement was briefly diverted from its prime goal in order to secure freedom for the Negro and the vote for the Negro, male. Senator Cohen of Pennsylvania.
If I have no reason to offer why a Negro man shall not vote, I have no reason why a white woman shall not vote.
In spite of attitudes like this, John Stuart Mill's The Subjection of Women best explained what had to be the coming course of events.
We have had the morality of submission and the morality of chivalry and generosity. The time is now come for the morality of justice.
The feminist movement began to concentrate on suffrage. The first gains had been minimal. Widows rearing children in the backwoods of Kentucky were allowed to vote in school elections as early as 1838. Not until 1869 did one territory, Wyoming, allow equal voting privileges for women. These were only beginnings.
To get the word male out of the Constitution cost the women of this country 52 years of pauseless campaign,
56 campaigns of state referenda,
480 campaigns to get legislators to submit suffrage amendments,
47 campaigns to get constitutional conventions to write women's suffrage into state constitutions,
277 campaigns to get state party conventions, and 30 campaigns to get presidential party conventions to include women's suffrage in party platforms.
19 campaigns with 19 successive Congresses, and the final work, ratification.
Millions of dollars were raised, mostly in small sums, and spent with economic care.
Hundreds of women gave the accumulated possibilities of an entire lifetime.
Thousands gave years of their lives.
Hundreds of thousands gave their constant interest in such aid as they could.
It was a continuous, seemingly endless chain of activity.
Young suffragists who helped forge the last links of that chain were not born when it began.
Old suffragists who helped forge the first links were dead when it ended.
Finally, some 250 years after the first feeble voice was heard, the issue of women's suffrage came to a head. Some within the movement became quite radical. A new organization which took the name National Women's Party was formed in 1916. To get favorable action from Wilson, who saw numerous delegations but kept stalling, a picket line was thrown around the White House in January 1917. It continued day after day. In April, war was declared, but the picketing continued. In June, patriotic mobs began to tear down their banners and maul the pickets.
On June 22nd, police started arresting the women. Treatment.
Instantly, the room was in havoc. The guards from the male prison fell upon us. I saw Miss Lincoln, a slight young girl, thrown to the floor. Mrs. Nolan, a delicate old lady of 73, was mastered by two men. Two men brought in Dorothy Day, twisting her arms above her head. Suddenly they lifted her and brought her body down twice over the back of an iron bench. They had been there a few minutes when Mrs. Lewis, all doubled over like a sack of flour, was thrown in. Her head struck the iron bed and she fell to the floor, senseless.
Women held marches. They went on hunger strikes. Alice Paul, for example, went 22 days before it was declared that she had the determination of a St. Joan. Women argued vehemently against the beliefs of anti-suffragists of the day. Those weren't, however, the only methods they used. New York Times, our own 12 anti-suffragist reasons.
Because no woman will leave her domestic duties to vote.
Because no woman who may vote will attend to her domestic duties.
Because it will make dissension between husband and wife.
Because every woman will vote as her husband tells her to.
Because bad women will corrupt politics.
Because bad politics will corrupt women.
Because women have no power or organization.
Because women will form a solid party and outvote men.
Because men and women are so different that they must stick to their different duties.
Because men and women are so much alike that men, with one vote each, can represent their views and ours too.
Because women cannot use force.
Because the militants did use force.
The shortest campaign was with Representative LaGuardia of New York. After being confronted by a suffrage representative, he blurted out, all in one breath, "I'm with you, I'm for it, I'm going to vote for it, now don't bother me!"
Finally, May 21st,
1919,
the House passed the 19th Amendment.
The right of the citizens of the United States to vote shall not be abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex.
June 4, 1919. The Senate approved the 19th Amendment.
August 26, 1920. The amendment became law.
Suffrage was secured. Along the way, women had made other minimal advances in education and industry. Feminists relaxed. The years after 1920 were relatively quiet. Women seemed to become more a part of her society, partially because of the demands for cheap labor in the increasingly technological age. In other words, women were needed as secretaries, as domestic help, to work in defense factories, etc. Of course, all at lower pay than men. Yet today, feminists and liberationists are again looking at the issue that suffrage almost ignored, the free development of the human qualities and potential of women. Are we still held in our own sphere? Are we still subjected to a position that is primarily defined by the male? What is our status as women in the 70s? To test your knowledge.
True or false, 2.9% of women working earn over $10,000 a year. 8% of men working earn over $10,000 a year.
False. 2.9% of women working do earn over $10,000 a year. 28% of men working earn over $10,000 a year.
True or false? Men and women are given the same prison sentences for the same offenses.
False. In some states, women are given longer prison sentences than men for the same offense.
A, his son, B, his daughter, learns in preschool how much fun it is to iron daddy's handkerchief.
B, his daughter.
76% of all women working hold routine clerical, sales, factory, or household jobs. True or false?
True. Although 46% of all women work outside the home.
The lowest job in the Army used as punishment is A, working 9 to 5, B, kitchen duty, KP.
It's obvious.
True or false? Full-time women workers today earn on the average 40% less than men.
True.
Fill in the blank. Stand up and take it like a
woman?
True or false? 24% of doctors of medicine are female.
True, in Great Britain. In the United States, the figure is 8.5%.
From a total of 435 districts in the United States Congress, the percentage of female representation is A, 23%, B, 50%, C, 2.5%.
C, 2.5%.
True or false? When a woman works, the chances are increased that her children will become neurotic or troubled.
False. There seems to be little difference between the children of working and non-working mothers.
A man, B, a woman, can be married and have a career too if he or she works hard at it.
No comment.
You've come a long way, baby, to get where you've gotten today. You've got your own cigarette.
We'll be right back for the conclusion of our feminist play.
Come see the Lawrence finals of the second annual Miss Black Teenage America Beauty Pageant on Saturday, March 31st. The proceeds from the pageant will be used to provide general assistance to students graduating from Lawrence High School who wish to major in the area of African studies. Tickets for this event are $2 for adults and $1 for children 12 years of age and under. For tickets in advance, contact Joyce Jelps at 864-4011 or 843-2507. If you wish simply to make a donation, please write your check to the KU African Studies Development Fund and mail it to the Treasurer, KU Endowment Association, the University of Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas, 66044. The second annual Miss Black Teenage America Beauty Pageant, 8 p.m. in the Kansas Union Ballroom on the campus of the University of Kansas, Saturday, March 31st.
This is Robert Conrad inviting you to join us each week on this station for the concerts of the Cleveland Orchestra. This week's concert will be under the baton of assistant conductor Matthias Bammert, who will conduct the Mozart Symphony No. 29, the American premiere of the music for viola and 22 players by Hans Werner Henze, with Walter Trampler as the soloist, and the Symphony in E-flat Major Opus 1 by Igor Stravinsky.
And you can hear this Cleveland Orchestra Tuesday night at 8, right here on KANU Lawrence, public radio from the University of Kansas.
The time now, 29 minutes past 7, and we return you to the further adventures of A Feminist Perspective.
Thank you for tuning back in to A Feminist Perspective. We will now do the conclusion to our feminist play. The title is We've Only Just Begun, and it was first formed at the IAWS convention in Fort Collins, Colorado in 1971.
You've come a long way, baby. Let's quickly measure the distance we've covered professionally. Medicine.
Women can attend medical school today, but admission is limited to 9%. After being admitted, the woman who is married receives little encouragement to continue. For example, a woman is expected to return to a full academic schedule within 3 to 14 days after she has given birth. As a practicing physician, she constantly meets male disapproval.
Mary Jane Dexter, M.D., 1970. Another instance of more overt, unreasoned hostility sticks in my mind. I had been in practice, relentlessly almost, for 13 years, in spite of bearing 5 children and having some other medical problems. Following the birth of my 6th child, I finally realized that full-time practice was just too much, for a while at least. At a medical staff meeting, I announced that I would only be able to work part-time for a while. This announcement was met with an angry blast from a male staff member who shouted at me that I could not do that. It had to be all or nothing. I naturally replied that I would certainly do all I could, considering the medical needs of the community, but could not do more. Leaving the meeting, the only member of the staff to even remark about the angry blast directed at me was our only osteopath on the staff. He simply said, "It's like being the wrong color, isn't it?" The part-time work was brief. Dr. Dexter practiced medicine for 4 more years and is now in the process of completing a residency in psychiatry.
Education.
Women are relatively active in education. In 1968, women earned 42% of all bachelor and first professional degrees, 36% of master degrees, and 2.6% of doctorates. Yet, while 9 out of 10 elementary school teachers are women,
8 out of 10 principals of these schools are men. On the university level, only 22% of the faculty is female. At the University of Michigan, for example, in 1969, the history department had only one female professor. Philosophy and English had none.
Women are active in education, but in the lower positions. Law.
Only 3.5% of lawyers are female. A leading law school in the East has stated that it would admit more women if law firms would hire them. On the other hand, the attitudes of law firms seems to be that there are few female law students who meet their standards.
Aviation.
Flight instruction is open to anyone with money to pay for lessons, but there is only one commercial female pilot in the United States. Only recently, stewardesses fought for and received the right to marry. The NFRW president, Gladys O'Donnell, can tell you firsthand about discrimination in this field. During World War II, she taught the flight instructors who taught the military pilots, but because she was a woman, she was barred from teaching the pilots themselves. According to studies, women seem better suited for space exploration than men, yet we have no female astronauts.
Finance.
Women own over half of the nation's wealth, yet only 10% of bank officers are women. And in 1967, only 36 women, as compared to 3,188 men, were on the New York Stock Exchange.
Science.
Not one woman sits on the National Science Foundation. Women are openly discouraged. A female scientist remarks that, "I was constantly asked why I was wasting my time and told to get married. I was told by my fellow workers that their wives preferred homemaking, and since I was a woman, I wouldn't be happy unless I did the same."
Government.
There are 13 female representatives to Congress and no senators. There have only been 2 women cabinet members. Of 8,750 judges presently sitting, less than 350 are women, most of whom sit on county courts.
Martha Griffiths. I have always been a staunch supporter of the right of any woman to hold any job for which her intelligence, training, and experience prepared her. But women have not yet succeeded in becoming direct participants in the world of government policymaking. Policy, even that very directly affecting the lives of millions of women, is made mostly by men.
Compound the problem, add race. To be black and female is to feel the double sting of the stigma.
Patricia Hayden, Donna Middleton, Patricia Robinson. Black women in the United States are so systematically left out of the society that we do not have an important part in producing the products bought and sold in this economy. We are civil servants, domestic servants, and servants to our families. The American dream is white and male. We are the exact opposite, black and female, and therefore carry the stigma, almost religious in nature, of the spurned and scorned and feared outcast.
The black woman is on the bottom of the wage scale, earning on the average less than half of what the white male does. Yet in 1965, 21% of black families were headed by a female. Is it any wonder that poverty haunts the individual who is black and female? Rarely, however, are the problems of the black female and her rights emphasized. Remember, 51% of the population is female, black and white, but female.
How did we ever get where we are?
Dr. Esther Westerfeld, Director of the New York State Guidance Center for Women, 1970.
The differential between the quantity and the degree of effort by and for women and the extent of their measured achievements can be, and usually is, attributed to sex discrimination.
Dr. Joy Osvosky, Assistant Professor of Human Development and Family Life at Cornell University.
Data on sex differences in abilities and behaviors lend support to the suggestion that sex difference in these areas are learned through the socialization process.
Birth.
Oh, what a pretty little girl.
He's a strapping little chap.
See how dainty she is?
Look at how a little fellow holds right onto my finger.
You can buy her lots of pretty dresses.
And ribbons.
You think you'll really like an electric train?
Preschool.
When you grow up, you'll get to have real babies of your own.
This little fella is going to grow up to be President of the United States.
School.
Dick and Jane, Chapter 1, Raking Leaves.
Oh, Sally, said Jane, let us go and help Father. He and Dick are raking leaves. Look at Father. Look at Dick. They are raking leaves. Let us go and help. Jane said, look, Father, we can help you. We can work.
Father said, oh, Jane, it is fun for you to play, but we have work to do today. Go, Jane. Go, Sally. Go to Mother. Go and help Mother.
Chapter 2. Here is the ball.
Dick said, run away, Puff. Jane and I want to play here. We want to play with the ball.
Jane said, get down, Puff. Run and find Sally. Go and play with Sally and Tim. Jane said, Father, I cannot get the ball down. Can you help me, Father? Can you jump and get the ball?
Dick said, oh, Jane, I can get the ball down. Dick said, here is the ball.
Jane said, Mother, did you see that? Did you see the ball come down? Dick did that.
Junior High.
President of the Student Senate, John Doe.
Vice President of the Student Senate, John Doe. Treasurer of the Student Senate, John Doe.
Secretary of the Student Senate, Jane.
Adolescents.
Dear Miss Teenage Advisor, I'm miserable. No one pays any attention to me. I don't seem to fit in. What can I do?
Dear L&F, find yourself a man. He'll put your world into perspective. Be feminine, soft, charming. Use your natural talents to build him up. Encourage him to talk about himself. Praise his achievements and remember that next to success, you will be the most important thing in his life. And lost and forlorn, you'll have found yourself, too.
Graduation. Preparation for life.
Well, Jane, you could do a number of things after high school. Secretarial work, go to college, be a teacher, perhaps. A woman needs something to fall back on. In case of an emergency, there are the professions. Nursing, for example. But then perhaps you'd rather be an airline stewardess. You'll meet a lot of men that way.
Life, men, marriage, birth.
Oh, what a pretty little girl.
This may seem a bit exaggerated to you, yet listen to how your family doctor is told to view you, a woman. From a textbook in gynecology in current use at the University of Michigan Medical School.
Chapter 4, Psychology and Life Periods of Women, The Feminine Core. The traits that compose the core of the feminine personality are
narcissism,
masochism,
and passivity.
The male traits of masculine narcissism, aggression, and activity lie at the other end of this spectrum.
Narcissism finds expression in many aspects of a woman's life, the most obvious being her interest in clothes, personal appearance, and beauty. The woman takes pleasure in the idea of being loved and measures her importance in terms of the person who loves her.
Every aspect of a woman's life is colored by her ability to accept the masochism that is part of her feminine role. As a young girl being courted, she must allow herself to be won by the man she chooses. In the role of wife, she often must suppress her own needs to build up the personality and strivings of her husband and family. Sexually, there is always an element of rape in that the male organ penetrates. As a mother, she sacrifices her own needs to those of her children.
Feminine passivity is actively directed toward construction and enhancement of the home and family. She must accept the idea that she is given things by her husband and even by her children, rather than assuming an active and aggressive role in attaining these things for herself. Sexually, she must be passive and receptive to the male. The woman gives up her own outward orientation and active and aggressive strivings for the rewards involved in identification with her family.
These traits must not only be in balance with each other, but also with the opposing masculine elements of the personality. If the masculine traits are stronger than the feminine traits, a masculine woman develops.
I love him, I love him, I love him, and where he goes I'll follow, I'll follow, I'll follow. He'll always be my true love, my true love, my true love, from now until forever, forever, forever. I will follow him wherever he may go. There isn't an ocean too deep, a mountain so high you can't keep me away from my love. I love him.
It has been said, even by men, that
it has always been men who have said that a woman's function in life was to serve man.
But women active in both the society around them and the home, perceive much of the weakness of this male-prescribed behavior.
Betty Friedan, author of The Feminine Mystique. You cannot tell a woman aged 18 to 20 that she can make a choice to just stay home all her life with her children, her friends, and her husband. This girl is going to live close to 100 years. There won't be children home to occupy her all her life. If she has intelligence and the opportunity for education, it is like telling her simply, put yourself in a garbage can, except for the years when you have a few little children at home.
Mary Lou Thomas, author of Voices of the New Feminism. Of course, nobody is saying that the traditional household, with the husband at work and the wife as housekeeper, wife, mother, and family representative in the community, will totally disappear. The new feminists have emphasized that if women continue to assume this role, it should be from choice rather than from tradition or man's insistence.
Catherine East, Executive Secretary of Citizens Advisory Council on the Status of Women. We must change the image of what women's life is. The media should do stories on the changing role of women in order to help change society's attitudes.
Elizabeth Duncan Kuntz, Director of Women's Bureau, Department of Labor. I believe that what women must have is freedom, the freedom to choose different lifestyles, the freedom to fulfill the best that is in them. A philosopher once said, the great law of culture is, let each become all that he was created capable of being. I do not think we ask for more than that. I am convinced we cannot settle for less.
What does the future hold? Freedom for the fullest development of each person's capabilities? How might this be realized? Possibly through
the changing of the image of woman from sex symbol to an individual with unlimited potential.
Improved counseling that will encourage young girls to explore professional activities.
The heightening of the male's awareness of his responsibility toward home and children.
A purposeful movement to include the economically deprived women in the leadership of the feminist movement so that she can assume control over her own economic future.
Child care centers under expert supervision.
A changing awareness of the necessity of accommodation to women who bear children and are active in professions.
Availability of abortion as an emergency method of birth control.
Emancipation from the fashion czars.
Of course, legislation that enforces equality of opportunity and legal status.
Much has changed. More needs to be changed. Change is occurring, but the direction and rate will be determined solely by those willing to devote themselves to a concept that still retains as much significance today as it did over 100 years ago. Susan B. Anthony.
Men, their rights, and nothing more. Women, their rights, and nothing less.
Let me introduce the other readers in our little dramatization tonight. They are Casey Ikey, Janet Sears, and Molly Laughlin, all assistants in the Dean of Women's office. Well, Troop, what are your reactions to our little play?
Other than it being quite obvious that we didn't have much time for rehearsal. The whole play kind of interests me in the ideas that really are older than I had thought. You know, in my perception, I thought all these ideas about women's movement and everything were fairly recent, or at least within the last 5 to 7 or however many years. But some of these quotes really point out that they're so much older than I had really thought.
Now, I share a little bit of Casey's perception. I've only been interested in feminism for about the past 8 years, I suppose, and I didn't know about these women when I was growing up. I mean, these are not the kind of women that were role models for me during my education. And to only come upon them after I've made some choices in my own life is really disheartening. And I'd like to think that that's not happening to young women today, but I know that's not true. I mean, when it's as much as change, and you hear some of the arguments being used against the Equal Rights Amendment, you know that for a lot of people, nothing has changed, really.
One of the interesting things that I noticed through these readings was the emphasis on the human aspect of the movement, that it's not only a women's movement, and there were several quotes that referred to men and how men were the real were also very real losers in the present setup and values. I kind of like to go from that idea and to talk about the human sexuality seminar that's coming up. Janet, you might want to.
Yes, I think that many people have an idea of what the women's movement is that is false and alienates them, and they don't feel like they want to be a part of it without knowing what it really is about. And like you said, Molly, men have a lot to gain from the movement, the human liberation movement, a chance to become involved in the lives of their children, to not have to compete, to not have to carry the role of breadwinner. The upcoming human sexuality seminar that you referred to is this Thursday evening, March 29th, in the Big 8 Room of the Kansas Union at 7:30. And the name of it is New Male Consciousness. And there some men and women will explore through some role-playing and some response to the situations in which men find themselves, what kinds of things men can gain from a new kind of society where people can make choices based on their abilities and interests rather than on role models and prescribed roles that they have to fit into. I think there are a number of men on the KU campus, for instance, that are starting to think about this. Several men's liberation groups have started in recent weeks, and they're starting to discuss some of these very real limitations on their own humanity that